This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
I have seen this guy stand on a bucket on a Manhattan sidewalk teaching marketers social media in a hurricane. All right, it wasn't a hurricane. It was drizzling, but it's up to me. I mean, I don't even look out the window if the sun's not up. So, all right, so Gary, you've been speaking across the planet to several marketers, a lot of people of all walks of life. And yep. I want to get some insight into what you instruct, what are the types of results that you've gotten for it. And if you could just give me in a nutshell, what is your background? What actually got you into this racket?
So, you know, basically I'm a retailer. You know, I grew up selling baseball cards and lemonade, and then I got involved in my family business selling wine. I wanted to create content, but I'm not a great writer, even though I had a big selling book. And so when I started seeing video pop with YouTube in 04, I started really, really paying attention and waited to February of 06 to do Wine Library TV. You know, I'm a storyteller, Neil. You know, that's my thing. I want people to understand that brands and companies succeed when they can tell the best stories and the consumer can consume it, understand it. But I'm also deep. I'm long on customer service. And I think that's what I'm seeing. I'm seeing things like Facebook fan pages be a great platform for storytelling. I see things like Twitter be an amazing platform for customer service. And I think that's why I've been so attracted to those two platforms. But there's things like Formspring and Gowalla and Foursquare and, you know, Ustream and Tumblr. So many platforms. I want my brands, like the NHL, like Campbell's Soup, like the New York Jets, Forbes magazine, to understand how to tell those stories authentically without the corporate BS, understanding that the consumer doesn't consume that anymore. Their filters are too strong. Our BS radars are over the top now. And understanding that the consumers have a voice and really respect and engage and interact, kind of like working the room at a cocktail party or a house party instead of giving a presentation or being the rapper at that house party. That's the difference.
Right, yeah, the difference between just going out and broadcasting and just engaging people. Okay, so you spoke a lot about using a lot of platforms. I once heard you at a conference. You stated that you shouldn't be just depending on, let's say, one platform. For instance, like a lot of people, they depend on. I come from a background of search engine optimization, so okay. Google. Google changes their algorithm, and you're back to sweeping floors and scrubbing the skid marks off of the toilet. So you definitely don't want that. So what do you recommend people to be, so to speak, platform agnostic, not to depend on other platforms, but rather build your own community?
I mean, we see it every day. I was talking back in 08 about TweetDeck and, you know, and TwitPic, and get Twitter out of your product name because they might do something. And sure enough, what's going on now the last 60 days? Everybody's freaking deeking because, you know, Twitter's doing its thing. You can't rely ever on one thing. It's diversity. It's the core of business. It's not some magical idea I have. This is the most basic business, you know, concept out there. If you're relying on one thing, just Twitter, just Facebook, or just SEO, or just best price, or just customer service, it's never one thing. But unfortunately, a lot of people in social media have really relied on one thing, whether it's just SEO, just their blog, definitely communication. I've seen people just use Facebook, just use Twitter. It's just not enough.
Okay, no, absolutely. Yeah, you definitely have
some chaos in the background.
Yeah, I do see him. Let me just go. Okay. Thank you. All right. Yeah, that's a 3-year-old.
Hey, that's how it rolls.
Sometimes I let him guest host on a blog.
I love it.
So, all right, so you've spoken at a lot of events. How many events have you spoken at?
I've probably keynoted, you know, in the ballpark of 50 to 100, you know, conferences at this point. A lot.
Okay. No, yeah, absolutely. I definitely see videos of you all over the place. And what are some of the challenges in teaching people how to use these digital networks to engage their target communities?
You know, Neil, I'll be honest with you and everybody on PBS watching now. I don't think there's any real big challenge. There's sadness, you know, sometimes, or, you know, just like, oh, shucks kind of stuff, because you're just, you know, there's definitely frustration because I know people don't get it or don't believe it or email me like I should have listened to you 24 months ago. You know, there's hope and you wish for people to succeed, but at the end of the day, there's only so much you can do as somebody who's a talking head, right? You spit your knowledge, you hope that people, you know, absorb it. The ones that do and succeed, you feel great about. The ones that don't, You feel like it's a lost opportunity. The ones that don't, even though they've listened to you, you try to dissect and figure out what's holding them back. So, you know, there's a different categorization for so many different people. But for me, you know what? I'm kind of like Teflon on this one. You know, I put it out there. There's only so much I can do. I hope people listen. You know, I hope they recognize that I'm coming from experience and I believe. But if they don't, I respect that because I'll see them at the finish line.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. No, yeah, I'm in complete agreement with that. And just recapping on what you're saying in regards to just putting it, that you definitely put it out there. You demonstrate a lot of passion whenever it is that you bring it to the microphone or bring it to the stage. Does that have, I also noticed that you're from Queens. I'm also from Queens, from Jamaica, Queens, New York. And I mean, a lot of what I do, I like, you know, coming out, being on video as well. And I just want to, like, a lot of that, it stems from having to bring it, come hard or come or not come at all. You know what I'm saying? So does your upbringing somehow influence the way that you teach people how to use these digital networks?
1,000%. I mean, I'm an immigrant, right? You know, I wasn't born in this country. I recognize through, you know, the conversations in my household growing up, how lucky we are to be here. You know, I grew up grinding, you know, Queens and then New Jersey. You know, the East Coast has that flavor that's just a little bit different. Most of my friends in the tech space are from California, and that's a different animal. Not that they're wrong. At the end of the day, I'll be honest with you, they're probably smarter. They're a little bit more relaxed. Right. They'll probably, you know, live a little longer, a little happier. But, you know, our East Coast flavor, we come straight thunder every time. And no question, you know, I want it. I'm hungrier than the far majority of my contemporaries. And that comes from being at a zero place.
Right. Absolutely. No, absolutely. The other thing I wanted to touch on is, like, for instance, my family, they come from Colombia. So the educational standard at which the family wants to see you is a lot higher than over here. They really want to, like, if you listen to the narrators over there, they speak a lot faster. You can even find a bum on the street and he sounds like he's about to win the Nobel Peace Prize. So do you have that same type of high educational standard in your Russian culture that's also forced you, actually pushed you to bring it at the capacity that you bring it and, you know, be able to teach people as best you can?
I think if you're from, you know, Korean or Chinese or Indian or from South America, you know, and you're an immigrant in this country, almost every family story across the board, everybody pushed education so hard because that was your way out, right?
Right, absolutely.
You know, mine did, but I was a crap student. I can't sit here and say I wasn't. I was driven by knowing that I had something in my gut and knew that I was good at certain things, and I focused on my strengths instead of my weaknesses. So I might be a little bit of an anomaly in that, but I definitely see it through so many other friends and family for sure.
In regards to the people that actually attend the events at which you speak, what are their professional backgrounds?
You know, I run the gamut. I run the gamut from people that, you know, are just super beginning to, you know, Fortune 500 CEOs, you know, so I've gone coast to coast on that. You know, it's either it's as fun atmosphere festival like as South By to brand 50 events, which you're talking about 50 of the top 500 companies in the world, CMOs or CEOs. So, you know, I'm very proud, I think, about that more than anything, which is that, you know, I can really go in any direction of chameleon like that. I think that's what made my wine successful. I could speak to the biggest sommeliers and the nerds of wine, but I could also really bring it down to that everyday consumer. And I think that's what I'm bringing to, you know, business and social media as well.
And I had posted that you would be interviewed for the PBS.org piece on social media training program. So I just wanted to get you for a little social training from some people on Twitter that ask you some questions. So if that'd be okay. The first one that I get is from, let me see, his name is, well, let me give you the second one. I can't find the first one.
Sure.
This is Rodney J. Woodruff. He says, so at Gary, did you learn to love the family business, or was it that the baseball card hustle translated to expensive wines?
Probably the baseball card hustle first, to be honest with you. The first thing that attracted me to wine was that people collected it. Mm-hmm. And that there was ratings and all that. And that seemed very sports-like to me. And so it attracted me. So no question, the baseball card hustle was what attracted me to the wine world first. And then I appreciated the vino for itself.
Okay. Now, in regards to the baseball card hustle, I remember I used to, like, keep all of the, like, the Jose Canseco's and the well, not Michael Jordan, that's basketball. But that was something that you were just picking – you were picking them up off of the collectors, or you're just buying the tops and then just putting them together?
Both. Into those buying the packs. I was going to shows. I was selling at shows since I was 14 years old. Mm-hmm. So, I was part of that culture. My guy was Mattingly. I bought a lot of Mattinglys. And then I made a crushing on Kenny Lofton. Kenny Lofton, who's a good baseball player for the Indians. Nobody knew who he was. Okay. And I great with that.
What do you have lined up in terms of speaking engagements, any type of educational opportunities that people could go see you at where they could learn more about how they could build their business online?
As you might have saw, Neil, I'm kind of like closing it down a little bit. I've decided to grow a playoff beard and start working and do less talking, public appearances. But if they go to GaryVaynerchuk.com, I do have a little widget on the right side with all my public appearances. I got about 4 or 5 more talks this year, and then I'm going off the grid.
Okay, great. Okay, so you're doing the Jason Bourne, going to India.
A little bit.
Okay, I feel that. All right, one last question. This comes from Eric Sornoso. As smartphones become more of the standard, do you believe Twitter can replace text messages?
I don't think so. I think text messages are too integrated. I think it could be an addition, and I think Twitter is unbelievably poised to be a major mobile play. Because I don't know about you, Neil. Let me flip the switch on you. I assume you use Twitter more mobily than you use Facebook, right?
Well,
or no?
Actually, I'm the last guy on the planet with that complimentary phone they give you on with the plan. Yep. So it's like with me, it's like
you need to put you in the Smithsonian.
Absolutely. I mean, even my newborn baby came out with an iPhone, tweeting like, "Tweet, what are you doing? What are you doing? I'm getting pulled out my mother's butt. What do you think?"
I love it. Yeah. I think it's close. But I definitely think there'll be a major play. I think they're very positioned to be a mobile player, but not replacing text messages.
Okay.
Text messages are just too deep.
Okay. Yeah. No. I definitely see that. They have a strong focused leadership in their category. And sure. I doubt that Twitter is just completely different. They want to do more online in terms of engaging people, keeping them online as well. I think
Twitter is very focused on mobile, as is everybody, as everybody should be. I just don't think you can replace text for sure.
Yeah, well the 140 character came from the SMS limit, correct?
I think that's
something like that to that effect.
Right.
All right, cool. Yeah, thank you very much for coming to the show. I'll go ahead and let you know what once everything is up. All right, so for Gary Vaynerchuk here on PBS.org, I thank you for watching. My name is Neil Rodriguez. Until next time.